folks, and they too accessed Medicaid match for their population so that they could save some money. So those folks who are coming to us through the corrections portal are also not going to be able to access treatment because corrections is dependent upon the Medicaid match too, that is, people being eligible for OHP standard. And the lion's share of the population who access residential treatment in our facility, which is our mission is to serve the indigent. Most of those people are OHP standard, and the people who are most severely affected by alcoholism and addiction are often single. They've lost everything. And so they don't have wives and husbands, and they have lost their children as well. So that gives you a little bit of a picture. Prior to 2000, our funds were partially a pass through from the CSAT block grant. I think Mitch Greenlook asked that question, and I think I'm not sure exactly how much of that, but. And I'm not sure what would be left of the system once the if OHP standard were totally eliminated. Another comment I wanted to make was that I was looking through the diagnoses the approved diagnoses on the health plan, and noticing that many of those diagnoses are illnesses that often are secondary to alcoholism and addictive disease. Illnesses like GI problems, hepatitis, illnesses or accidents, pneumonia, diabetes, secondary to alcoholism. And the admissions to hospitals in the state of Oregon in 2001 for these diagnostic categories, according to a publication by the Oregon Partnership, cost the state about $84 million. The state has created a wonderful system where hopefully we intervene earlier, and over time you begin to see a decline in hospitalization. These are illnesses secondary to addiction and alcoholism, and that you would see a decline in those kinds of hospital admissions. The idea of funding catastrophic illness, which someone proposed, is certainly one way of the state discharging its obligation. But again, you really are treating for this population the consequences of other issues. And finally, I wanted to tell you a story about somebody. You were asking about success stories, and DePaul has been around for 25 years, and we have many of our employees are people who went through treatment in our facility. And one in particular, a woman whose name is Betty, was someone who started treatment when I was there. I happened to know her in treatment. Some of the people who worked there, I was not there when they were in treatment. But Betty came through treatment, and she had lost her children. She was a heroin addict who had come in to get help, and she really did well in our women's program, the residential program. And while she was there, we had an opportunity to have a visit from the Women's Care Foundation, which is a foundation in Portland that supports women's issues. And they were so impressed by Betty's comments about her treatment that they gave us money. So that was one way, not that we have our clients trying to get money on the private sector, but she was really eloquent. And then 2 years later, Betty came and applied for a job with DePaul and is now working as an admissions counselor, and she is now a taxpayer, and she's been very successful. And she is one of the employees who we had to cut because of cuts to our budget. She was cut to part-time. But I wanted to give you an example of a program that works effectively where people go, they go through the system, and then they become people who give back to the community. And I would like to answer any other questions that might occur to you that were not answered by my colleagues.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said you lost 28 beds. 28 out of how many?
I'm sorry?
I think you said you lost 28 treatment beds.
We lost 16.
16.
16.
Out of how many?
Out of 72 funded.
And those, the balance that are funded are funded through the state or through other sources of funding?
I'm sorry, student.
Yes, are the balance of those that are still funded, are some of those...
Well, we have the 65-35% split. 65% of our residential clients must be OHP eligible. 17 of those, the current beds we have, are corrections.
Okay, thank you. One more question, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on your comments about these folks not having family, that they've lost their family in various ways, I know that there's some expectation by some participants in the policy community that, well, families will step in and help take care of their family members who are defunded from the state. But what you're drawing our attention to is, in this case, nobody's going to step in and enable these people to have care.
No, I think for the population we're talking about, it's a simple case of cost shifting. This population will end up on the street. They will end up in corrections, in jail, or in the hospitals. And in the hospitals will have to treat them, and those costs will be passed on to me and you and other people who have to buy health insurance.
One more question, Mr. Chair. I'm guessing there are different points in the past when demand has been higher than your ability to meet the supply. Have there been any studies done that have looked at those who did not receive treatment and the cost that they imposed on society, if you will, versus those who were able to get treatment, and that would help us understand the impact of losing this treatment capability?
In terms of dollars or...
Dollars, prison terms, crimes committed, suicides, the whole gamut.
I cannot give you a definitive answer. I wish I could, because I think I could say all of these things could happen, and maybe everyone will move out of state. I don't know. I doubt it. But I do know that most of the people who come to us have been referred by a probation officer. So I'm assuming that if they cannot get treatment, they end up in the community committing crimes, or they are returned to the correctional system. If the correctional system can't accommodate them, they're still out in the community committing crimes to support the lifestyle that they have had.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think Representative Merkley asked a good and fundamental question. I mean, having served on I don't say this in a pejorative nature at all, but having served on the Ways and Means Committee, we have never funded any budget adequately or properly. Not once, any time, ever. So having said that, there has to be some way to quantify. I'm saying this to Mary and Rick and Sheila and Leslie and Bruce and Phyllis and everyone that's out there, you know, help us be able to quantify what, as in Representative Merkley's words, you know, what it meant to the state in terms of jobs in the economy, loss of life, cost shift. What did that mean to us? So I don't want to, we've got to move pretty quickly here. I've got two more witnesses and we're done right now. Representative Bates.
Sorry if I said that, Mr. Chair. As I sat and listened to your testimony, I just was thinking back to 91, 92, 93, before we had the programs we have in place now. I was trying to think if our society had changed in that time. We had a huge economic upswing, which was good. I tried to think what was different before we had these programs. And the only thing I could think of, and I think it was germane to your comments, and I want to hear your thoughts on it, was that our crime rate went down. Our crime rate went down substantially in the last 10 years. And I'm wondering if some of that crime rate decline, which no one knows for sure what happened. Some people say it's Measure 11. Other states haven't got a Measure 11. Their crime rates have gone down. Aging of the population. But I'm wondering in my mind if the programs we have for A&E, the programs we have for mental health, have not been a significant part of the decline of crime in our society. Do you have a comment?
Well, of course, I think they have. I was not here in the early 90s, so I did not come to Oregon until after the Oregon Health Plan. I'm not sure about whether that was a good idea now, but in any case, I don't know what was in place. I do know, just generally speaking, that treatment is effective and that people are returned to become productive citizens and taxpayers there. It is as effective as someone treated for heart disease or diabetes. And it's more effective, actually, if you look at the statistics. So the more treatment we have, and the fact is, with the Oregon Health Plan, we were able to treat more people at a lower level of care. So we were able to intervene earlier. And so I think it was effective. I also think that the way that the state changed the rate structure, which was to change from a slot rate to what is to fee for service, enabled us to treat more people because we were able to move people through the system a little faster because we had a better system to offer those people.
Maybe we can get some help with that on our next witness. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Botkins. We want to ask you some questions. So we want you to be quick and brief, and then we'll get to Martha Strawn Morris and Ann Hannon.
Mr. Chair, it's a pleasure. It's been a while. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees.
Pull that puppy a little closer.
Okay. Is that better? I don't know about your committee, but I kind of feel like I'm trapped in Freddy Krueger's pinball machine. You know, I go from one hearing to another talking about who's going to die in this hearing room and who's going to get abused in this hearing room and all the horrible things are going to happen, and we can just kind of take the tour of each hearing room and figure out the human, you know, tragedies that are going to happen with the budget. I want to do a couple of things first. I want to respond to the DUII stuff. I think that you did a little bit, Mr. Chair. The reality is we need to explain this over and over again. DUII, it's a felony. You go to jail. Unless, of course, we don't have any indigent defense funds. If we don't have any indigent defense funds, this is still America. We still don't get to lock you up without a trial. And so if there's no defense, you don't stay in jail. So you get out again. And if the cycle continues, it will continue to the point where it becomes vehicular manslaughter or some horrific crime that could have been maybe prevented with some good A&D treatment. No guarantees, of course, but certainly it would have been better.
You commit a big enough crime, you will get indigent defense.
Yeah. You just have to keep working your way up the ladder till you get there. Unfortunately, I didn't come to Oregon with the Oregon Health Plan. I've been here my entire life. Or maybe that's fortunate. I was here when we closed down all the hospitals and put all the folks out into the community and promised them better services. I now represent the folks who are charged with providing the services who are now losing their jobs or walking away from their jobs because they're so frustrated with their inability to treat their clients with even the most basic services that it's easier to walk away than it is to watch them die. And I don't mean to be, you know, theatrical here. I will tell you that in Multnomah County, we have at least 5 of our clients who have committed suicide, not because they lost their benefits or their program, but because they thought they were going to lose their programs. That tends to traumatize the people that I represent. And we're just trying to hang on to the best and the brightest at this point. Family assistance. You know, I don't know too many families who can afford, one, to step in and provide the kind of assistance that we're talking about. And two, as one of the gentlemen said, this is, you know, these are not people that most families want to be around. I don't know whether any of you have ever dealt with an alcoholic in your family. I have a brother who served for two tours in Vietnam and came home and for a variety of reasons became almost homeless drunk. And I send him checks through my other brother because I don't want him in my environment. I want to help, but I don't want him in my environment. And, you know, not everybody has the ability to even do that. And so I think that there is some realism here that a lot of these folks have so abused their family members by the time they get to the point where they don't have services left, the family members don't want them to remember their address, their phone number, and they wish they'd forget their name. So this is not a clientele that begs to be served by warm and cuddly family members. I think that one of the things that we have kind of walked away from, and I'm going to really risk making some of you cranky with me, and I'm going to apologize right now, because in a minute I'm going to say the words you all, some of you, really, really hate. I was here when we created the Oregon Health Plan. I worked with John Kitzhaber when he was in the Senate to create the Oregon Health Plan. I fought with him as a representative for our union over the Oregon Health Plan, over the words that went into the law, over how it was going to be funded. I was here. The term employer mandate was a huge issue for many of us. And at the time, it was even an issue for the business community because we acknowledged both the workers who got health insurance and the businesses who provided health insurance that we were both paying the bill for all of the people who don't provide health benefits to their employees. And there was envisioned originally a way, part of the way you funded the Oregon Health Plan was to put a tax on the businesses who did not provide a basic plan to their employees so that they were helping to pay the cost of the only way their employees got health insurance, which was through the emergency room or through some other alternative form. The alternative form was the health plan. It took about 30 seconds for us to figure out a way to get rid of the employer mandates. And that's a bad thing. And, you know, I guess, you know, as long as, maybe I don't ever have to come back to this committee.
You've got about 30 seconds right now.
Yeah, okay. So I figure we've got some options. And I know that these options aren't something you want to do, Mr. Chair. We can abandon these folks. We can abandon the health plan, go back to Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, and provide a whole lot of services for a very few bunch of people. We can stop the bleeding.
I think that's fewer services for a whole heck of a lot less people.
Yeah, whatever. The group that gets it goes down, and the level maybe goes up. I don't know what it does anymore.
It goes down.
Okay, well, that probably is true, too. We can stop the bleeding by just simply hanging on to the tax dollars we collect now. You know, we can, if we went from, let's see, two years ago, 54 cents of every dollar was kept, and the rest of it went out in some kind of tax break. So we could go back and take a look at that and say, okay, we're gonna at least hold the level there. But this year we're going to go up to 58 cents of every dollar goes out. So we should think about maybe doing that. I mean, the 4 cents would at least create some money that we could spend. And You know, we're going to get them. Our union's going to get these people one way or the other because we represent everybody. We're either going to get them through the health plan and through those services. We're going to get them through mental health treatment through those services. We're going to get them in the prisons through those services, or we're going to get them in the morgue when that's all that's left. You know, we just assume get them at the front end and stop the pain they bring to everybody else that they touch sometimes.
Any quick questions?
I'm done. Thank you very
Mary.
Much.
Mary? Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
She's always a light. Understand?
I'm always what?
A light. Martha
Strawn. You should come to public upper. Safety.
Yeah. Martha Strawn Morris and Ann Hannon. Enter, sign in, please, and do your best to get this done in 5 minutes because some of us are already late to previous commitments.
I'm Martha Strawn Morris, one of the founding collaborators of the Family Involvement Team in Multnomah County, a program to rapidly access alcohol and drug treatment services at juvenile court for parents whose children have been removed for abuse and neglect.
My name is Ann Hannon, and I work for DHS, and I'm a worker who helps parents at the time of removal at the first shelter hearing to help them get into treatment. So what we know is that 90% of parents who lose their children at the first shelter hearing due to abuse and neglect need coverage to access, need Oregon Health Plan coverage or mental health and drug and alcohol services to ameliorate their situation so they can have their children return to their care. Family members aren't willing to help the parents, usually because they're taking care of the kids already, and that's quite a handful. Last week, there were two parents who were referred to outpatient treatment or could have benefited from outpatient treatment, but they won't be able to access it because they're on the Oregon Health Plan standard. There are also two parents who could have benefited from inpatient treatment. They can't bring their kids in with them because of different abuse reasons, et cetera, that need to be settled, and they won't ever, they're losing, all four of those parents will lose any chance at ever getting their kids back. Also, in a meeting last week, four moms who are in outpatient treatment right now, they've all admitted to their counselors that they're all pregnant now so that they can continue to get the Oregon Health Plan Plus plan because their other children had been removed. So that was quite the 1 week.
What was that?
It was pretty self-explanatory, but Ann, you can say that again in more blunt terms if you want.
Hold the microphone a little closer.
Four moms admitted to their drug and alcohol outpatient counselors that they had decided that in order to get back on the OHP Plus plan, which would allow them to stay on.
Thanks.
That they.
Well, I just want to make sure I heard that correctly. Okay. Thank you for repeating it. Very important.
I think
we are back to 1991, Chair.
We're just very, Martha. Very concerned about this particular population of children that we believe are the most vulnerable children in our community. And what we know from the 2.5 years that this team has been operating to basically pick parents up at the juvenile court door and get them into alcohol and drug treatment is that we're saving families. Kids are going home, and the parents are not having more children who are addicted to drugs themselves or having to be removed and put in the foster care system. I mean, we know it. We're seeing success. 70% of the parents that we helped place in residential treatment were successful in their treatment. Almost 70% of their kids were returned to them, and we're watching for subsequent removals, and we're not seeing them. Really, that's what we're worried about. So that's our main point, is keeping that eye on the child welfare population and their loss of the A&D services. Thank you.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have studies that basically show that these children will be a lot better off if they are able to be rejoined with their parents?
Yes, we do. We did a research review of 16 studies that showed that kids benefited behaviorally and developmentally more so than when they were placed with their relatives or in foster care, and that the mothers, the studies were all based on mothers, not fathers, and that the mothers did way better in treatment with their children.
Okay. So we're not just simply saying that this is a nice thing for the parents to be able to be back with their kids. We're saying that we are going to impact the course of these children's ability to succeed in society by the situation.
Yes.
Thank you.
Breaking the generational cycle.
And the methodology of that study included the whole universe of mothers that where the treatment took the first time, then relapsed, maybe made it the second time, and then regrettably that population where they didn't make it at all.
Right.
And the negative impact of on those kids living in those stressed environments. So it was
different
everybody.
Different methodologies by different studies, but yeah, they were looking at really broad populations, some over 3 years, 180 moms, 130 moms over 5 years. I mean, they were broad populations.
So the good, the bad, and the ugly of the situations, or the potential outcomes. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say I appreciate any of that data that you can provide to us would be helpful.
We actually didn't know we were coming to speak today. We expected this room to be overflowing, and we're quite surprised to get any time at all. So we will provide that by tomorrow.
Thank you.
Chair.
That would be very helpful. Representative Bates.
Real quickly, I know we have to get out of here. Follow up that question. Did that data also include kids who have been adopted? I mean, one of the reasons that foster care fails and families fail is that quite often the children are placed with, especially inside families with relatives, who developed the first set of parents in the first place, and they go back into a home that's no better or even worse than the one we had before. So that's a factor I've seen over and over again in 25 years. But adopted children are the ones that I see turn it around. Those are the ones that make a difference. But they have to be adopted completely out and at an early enough age that they've not been damaged already. Was that included in those studies by any chance?
I don't believe so. There was just reference to children who were in foster care with their relatives.
I'm not aware of any of the studies that looked at children's emotional and behavioral outcomes and certain measures that follow them into adoptive placements. But as a state, we're required to make reasonable efforts to reunify these families, and we have to do it quickly. And we basically are going to say, okay, sorry, you can't have your kids back, but we also can't give you any treatment or any help. And I don't want to face those children when they grow up and bring their kids into my foster care system in juvenile court. I don't.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Now, I think the important thing is if we can get not only the summary of the studies, but the studies themselves.
We can provide that, no problem.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming, and we're glad you were able to get in front of us.
Thank you.
Come back anytime. Thank you. Normally I'd open this up to the committee to discuss some things. Let's try and do that tomorrow. I know we've all got obligations that have already started or shortly to begin. So seeing no other business coming before the committee, we are adjourned.